Hey everybody, it's Britt, lead pastor at Sunridge. Welcome back to our teaching podcast. You know, we are on a mission here at Sunridge to help people find and follow Jesus. We believe in the good news that Jesus welcomes all, regardless of how far you feel from God. That means we're a great starting point to explore Christianity or to sink your spiritual roots deep as a devoted Jesus follower. If you'd like to know more about us, just check out our website at sunridgechurch.org. And of course, we'd love to have you drop in anytime for a visit to learn and worship along with us. And now, here's our teaching for this week. You know, if you're new here, my name's Britt. I serve here as the lead pastor, so welcome to Sunday morning here at Sunridge. Recently, I came across a book titled The Book of Heroic Failures. And it's a book about people's attempts to do something heroic that turned out to be a failure. There's some really quirky stories in there. People make these inventions that don't work out, or they try to do something and it doesn't work out. And it's funny. It's actually a funny book. But one of my favorite stories comes from 1978. The Britain News reported that this elderly woman called the local fire department because her cat was stuck in a tree. And some of you may know, I'm trying to keep it a secret, but I used to be a fireman, so this story really sticks with me. And I just want to tell you, the fire department doesn't do that anymore. We don't get cats out of trees, basically because they always come down. And as my first captain asked me when we went on a call and told people, we're not going to get your cat out of the tree, he said, have you ever seen a cat skeleton in a tree? And I said, no, and he goes, see, they come down. So anyway, back then they did this, and the fire department arrived, and they rescued the cat. The woman was so thankful that she invited them in to have tea with her. And after enjoying the tea and more profuse thanks from her, as the firefighters were backing out, oh, they did rescue the cat, by the way. They rescued the cat. And as they were backing out of the driveway, they ran over the cat. Now, that story's funny because it was a cat and not a dog. Ooh. So send your emails to bobsanti@sunridgechurch.org, please. But most failures aren't funny. They're painful, right? And they can leave scars that last for a lifetime. So today what we're doing is we're wrapping up, as Jed said, our six-month study through the Gospel of John. And how appropriate for John to conclude with this conversation that Bill just read to us. It's unique to John's gospel, and so no other book in the Bible has this part of Jesus' life. And how appropriate that he closes out his biography of Jesus' life by telling us about this face-to-face meeting of the resurrected Jesus and Peter. And if you're not familiar, Peter's the one who declared very boldly, though others may abandon you, Lord, I will never fail you. And shortly thereafter, he denied Jesus three times. So, and if we're honest, all of us fail in our efforts to follow Jesus, right? To live as Christians, we don't always get it right. So, if you're here today and you've never felt like you let God down, or that you failed to live up to your Christian values, I just want to tell you, you're probably in the wrong church, and you have the wrong pastor, because we all fail. I want to take you in the Wayback Machine to a band called DC Talk. And they had a song out called What If I Stumble? And here's the lyrics. What if I stumble? What if I fall? What if I lose my step and make fools of us all? Will the love continue if my walk becomes a crawl? What if I stumble? And what if I fall? So my question is, just how does God respond to our failures? Well, I'm here to tell you that we don't have to wonder, because we have an example right here in this last chapter of John's gospel. So today what we're going to do, as we usually do, is we're going to look at this passage, get an overview about what happened, and then we're going to talk about how what happened then applies perhaps to us today in our lives. So we start with an overview, a fishing miracle in John 21, verses 1 through 8, and every fisherman would love to have a day like this. John writes that Peter and the other disciples went back to fishing, but in verse 3, but that night they caught nothing. And after fishing all night, John says they come up skunked.
they should have probably just gone to the Blue Water Grill or Long John Silver's. And as the sun is rising on this day, Jesus is on shore, but they're too far from shore to recognize him at first. In verse 5, he calls out to them, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" "No," they answered. And that's like the most painful thing for a fisherman to have to say. If you've ever experienced pulling into a dock, into the docks after fishing all day with no fish, while the other boats are stacking their catch on the dock, it's a bummer. And then this, for most fishermen, this unwelcome and unsolicited advice in verse 6, Jesus said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." It's kind of insulting, because if you're a fisherman, this is your job, you're thinking, you know, there's not going to be fish on the other side of this little boat. But when they did, John says they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. And so John then puts two and two together. In verse 7, the disciple whom Jesus loved, that's John, said to Peter, "It's the Lord." And when Peter hears that, he wraps his outer garment around him, because as he's waded in the water, he's kind of like in a loincloth. And he quickly wades back to shore. And so this little part of the story, this is like the prodigal son in reverse. In the prodigal son, the father runs to the son as he returns. And here, Peter, the lost one, runs to Jesus. The other disciples, they tow the fish to shore, and they're greeted by Jesus, who's prepared, in verses 9 through 14, a morning fish fry. Verse 9, when they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. And Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you've just caught." So they're going to have fish for breakfast, which that might seem unusual to you, but in the Jewish communities that lived around the Sea of Galilee in the first century, this is kind of a staple, and it's normal to eat fish for breakfast. And then following that morning brunch, Jesus has a conversation with Simon Peter in verses 15 through 23. After breakfast, Jesus asked Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" So why is Jesus asking him that? It's because of his failure. After being so bold as to declare he would never leave Jesus' side, a little servant girl identifies Peter as one of Jesus' followers and calls him out, and Peter folds like a cheap suit. And so Jesus asks Peter this question three times. And this first part, like, "Do you love me more than these?" John doesn't tell us what that is. Who are these? Is it the fish? Is it his business? Is it his friends? And each time Peter answers, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And each time Jesus responds with an assignment to care for his sheep. Now, in our English translation, this interaction seems confusing. Jesus, do you love me? Peter, yes, I love you. So why does Jesus ask him three times? The answer may be found in the original language that the New Testament is written in. The English language has one word for love, love. But the first century Greek language, which the New Testament was written in, has several. All are translated love in our English version, but each is more nuanced and is, in a sense, like a different kind of love. And if you've ever been that guy who told a girl that you loved her, and then she replied back to you, "I like you a lot," you're getting the point here. So the first two times, Jesus uses agape love. And that's the unconditional love of God. And the last time, and then Peter, the first two times, he answers with phileo, which is brotherly love, kind of like, "I like you." And the last time Jesus asks, "Do you phileo me?" And then Peter answers with phileo. Now, some scholars believe that that makes a substantial difference and others don't. But I just want to read through their conversation and noting those differences so that you can get the feel. John 21:15, when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you agape me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I phileo you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. And again in verse 16, Simon, son of John, do you agape me? And he answered, yes, Lord, you know that I phileo you. And Jesus said, take care of my sheep. And the third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you phileo me? And Peter was hurt, John says, because Jesus asked him the third time, do you phileo me? And he said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I phileo you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. Now, eventually, Peter and Jesus go for a walk as they're talking. And Jesus cautions Peter in this conversation that his love for Jesus is going to be tested in the future. Verse 18, very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself, you went where you wanted, but when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. And this, the way this is said, when he says, stretch out your hands, Peter's going to interpret it as a crucifixion. And to dress yourself also means to bind, like as they would sometimes fasten someone's hands or arms to the cross with ropes. And John confirms this interpretation in his commentary part of this in verse 19. Jesus said this, he's explaining why Jesus said it to him, to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And then he said to him, follow me. Now, wherever they're walking, John has followed. And he's probably overheard this entire conversation. This is how he's recounting it. And in verse 20, Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved, John, was following them. And that prompts Peter to ask to Jesus, verse 21, Lord, what about him? You've just told me that I'm going to die by crucifixion. What about him? And Jesus answered him, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. And then other than a two-verse kind of epilogue, this is how John closes out his record of Jesus' life and ministry. So what can we learn from this last chapter in the Gospel of John? I believe that God's word always speaks to real life. It's not just ancient history or abstract theology. It speaks to our relationships, our decisions, our values, our priorities. So let's take what we've seen here in chapter 21 and like kind of roll it forward into the world that we live in, Monday morning, real world stuff. What is the invitation of Jesus in this passage? What is the invitation of Jesus when, like Peter, we stumble or we fall? When I blow up in anger? When I'm grumpy to my kids and my spouse? When I fail morally? When I get a divorce? When I get a DUI? Or when I just ignore my relationship with God for an extended period of time? Four things I think that we can draw out that tells us what Jesus is inviting us into when we stumble and fall. Number one, Jesus invites himself into our failure. He invites himself into our failure. Jesus doesn't pursue us in spite of our failure. He pursues us because of it. Peter failed Jesus in the biggest, loudest way possible. And even after witnessing the greatest miracle of all time, the resurrection, Peter and the disciples abandon their calling and they just go back to their old lives. Did Jesus abandon them? Did he say, well, I guess I'm going to have to move on to some more faithful, worthy disciples? No. He shows up. He disrupts their day and invites them to look beyond their failure. So how often do you and I do something similar to Peter and his friends? When life's not as we imagined, the script doesn't go as we would write it, when we're confused or uncertain, when we become disillusioned, we're tempted to put some distance between ourselves and God. We'll stop going to church. We'll drop out of our group. We'll stop reading our Bibles. We'll return to the old life or our old ways. Or maybe we just isolate ourselves. We just hunker down. And we try to do things in our own strength. King David contemplated this thing of like putting distance between himself and God. In Psalm 139:7, he prayed this out loud. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you're there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your hand will hold me fast. I don't know what's in front of you today or what is in your past. But what I do know is that Jesus will not abandon you. He comes after the one in 100, he said. He invites himself into our failure. Number two, Jesus invites us into fellowship with him. He invites us into fellowship with him. John 21 shows us not only how Jesus pursues us, but that he wants to be in a relationship with us. Verse 12, Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. Now that may seem like a weird invitation to some people that are flailing in their faith. But in the first century, an invitation to a meal was huge. It was more than just eating food together. Sitting at a table, sharing food was a central part of their social life. Sharing a meal together was an expression of hospitality. You're welcome here. And generosity. I want to share with you. Sharing a meal demonstrated unity. Eating with people revealed you were for them, even if you had your differences. And this is why the Pharisees complained so much about Jesus hanging out with sinners. Sharing a meal also conveyed a shared social status. It says, you belong, we belong together. And a meal held spiritual significance as well. A meal was a sacred moment to a first century Jew. The Jewish tradition at that time viewed that this table that you would eat at as a small sanctuary, like a little mini church, a microcosm of God's temple, like the Last Supper. So when Jesus whipped up breakfast for these guys, he was saying, I'm not here to berate you and your failures. I'm not here to just get you back serving me. He was saying, I want to be in a relationship with you. I'm here because that's what I want. How long has it been since you sat with Jesus? I know you can't do that physically, but when's the last time you opened your Bible? Or is it dusty like my surfboards are right now? You listen to the Bible on your commute and just let God speak to you. Are you part of a group or a study so you can process what God is doing in your life with others? Are you praying about that big decision you have in your life? Or just your everyday things? Maybe you've just been avoiding Jesus because you feel like he wants distance between you and him. You will never be effective for Jesus until you spend time with Jesus. By the way, Jesus here is also showing us how the gospel is shared. It's not shared remotely by shouting at people, by berating them, by reminding them of all of their failures, by pointing our fingers in judgment. It is by sitting down and sharing a meal with people, face to face, building a relationship with them. Jesus invites himself into our failure, and he invites us into a meaningful relationship with him that we call fellowship. Number three, Jesus invites us into a higher purpose. A higher purpose. Jesus invites Peter to care for his sheep in response to his statement that he loves him. Verse 16, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said, take care of my sheep. Jesus takes Peter's failure, he restores his relationship with him. And then in essence, he says, take what I've done for you and pay it forward. Take this experience and push it into someone else's life. And I think that Peter, with all of his faults, he wanted to be useful. He wanted to have a purpose in his life. And I think that he came alive under Jesus' mentorship. And I think that he was excited to be a part of what Jesus was doing in the world. But he lost his way. And that can happen to any of us. Jesus seeks Peter out in his failure. He invites him into fellowship around a meal. And then he commissions him in a way. He gives him a purpose. He says, care for my sheep. And that's so important for those of us who believe that we failed God in some way or think that God has placed us on a shelf. If you're still breathing, God still intends to use you regardless of what is a part of your present or your past. He has a higher purpose for each of us. And sometimes, isn't it true that our light can shine even brighter in the midst of a failure? Now, you might be thinking, Britt, I'm not an apostle, I'm not a preacher, so I don't see how this applies to me. And this last invitation of Jesus, I think, will resonate with you. Number four, Jesus invites us to follow him on the unique path that he has for us. To follow him on the unique path he has for us. Take care of my sheep doesn't just apply to pastors and missionaries. Caring for God's sheep is the path God has for all of us who follow Jesus. We're all on God's sheep care team. It's just going to look different based on who we are and our situation in life. But look at some of these scriptures that speak to this in Hebrews 3:13. Encourage one another daily. Caring for a sheep includes encouraging someone who's struggling, a friend, a neighbor, a coworker. James writes in 5:19 through 20, if any of you should wander from the truth, someone should bring them back. So sometimes our path is simply to help someone who we can tell is drifting away from God. John writes in 1 John 3:18, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and truth. So sometimes just doing practical things for people, like providing a meal, helping them out with childcare, giving them a ride to church. That's caring for God's sheep. Titus talks about the older men and the older women mentoring the younger. So that's about making ourselves available to other people. In children's ministry, making ourselves available to the younger, in Bible studies or in our groups. And many of Paul's letters say, greet one another with a holy kiss. Now, we're not going to start a kissing team here at Sunridge, but you can welcome people. You can be a greeter. You can be at our welcome table. It's not the kissing table, I want to assure you, it's a welcome table. Or you can just say hello. You can just be a welcoming person when you're here. That's caring for God's sheep. There's a guy who's becoming a friend of mine that came to Sunridge, you know, a number of months ago. And what he said about Sunridge to me was like, it's like immediately when I walked on this campus, I felt so welcomed. And now I see him walking around, saying hello to people and meeting people he doesn't know. He's just becoming what he felt from you, church. And that's his path. He's becoming part. That's he's following Jesus in doing that. It's as simple as that. When Jesus invites Peter to follow him in caring for his sheep, he tells him this could come with a cost. By that, he's indicating that Peter's going to die by crucifixion. And you can tell that this is rambling around in Peter's mind, because he wonders if he's the only one. And in verse 21, again, we read it. When Peter saw him, John, he asked, Lord, what about him? And John answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, which we know from studying John, he's the only one that died of old age, right? Then what is that to you? You must follow me. I'm confident that was a disturbing thought to Peter. It's like, why does it have to be me? What about him? And I think there was a little, I've mentioned before, a little competition between these two. You know, John brags that he beat Peter to the tomb. And, you know, there's just these things, you can see the tension between them. But I think what's noteworthy about this revelation is not that some of us could pay a very high price for following Jesus, but for those who are trying our best to follow him, it's going to look different. When I say that God has something unique for us in this calling to a higher purpose, unique for us is important because we're not all pastors, right? We're teachers and carpenters. We're business owners and stay-at-home moms. We're military people and we're mechanics. We're programmers and retirees. So what does it mean to follow Jesus in the unique path he has for us? In his book, Practicing the Way, John Mark Comer writes this. Remember WWJD, what would Jesus do? It's a fine question, but a much better question is WWJDIHWM, which is, what would Jesus do if he were me? And he goes on, he says, why is it better? Because the odds are that you're not a first century celibate Jewish rabbi. You're a 21st century mom, a freshman at uni, VP of a startup, freelance graphic designer, or my secret dream, a luchador. He continues, it's a bit hard to ask what would Jesus do if your current work is raising a two-year-old or teaching kindergarten or writing software, designing an HVAC system for a new building downtown, much less if you're doing any of the latter while raising your two-year-old. Instead, ask this. This is so good. How would Jesus live if he had my gender, place, personality profile, age, life stage, job, resources, and address? How would he show up to the world? How would he handle blank? For the apprentice of Jesus, that is the question all of life becomes an attempt to answer. I think that's so good. We've noted many times through our study of John that he said that he wrote this record of Jesus' life to help to lead people to believe. I hope you do. And I hope, if you have already, that this has helped you. But this last chapter of John is for all the people that have stumbled and failed God sometime in your life. Maybe you even feel unworthy to sit in church this morning. John reveals that regardless of whatever you've done, whatever's happened, that Jesus has also invited you to follow him. The God who met Peter in his failure is the same God who meets you in yours. And his invitation is still the same. Follow me. Even if you failed, and you will, and even if you think God has given up on you, he has not. I'm going to ask the band to come up. And while they come up, I just want to say, you know, sometimes when we talk about failure and restoration, we think it only happens in the Bible with big-time people like Peter. But this isn't just Peter's story. And I think of someone like Kurt Warner. You probably know him as a Super Bowl-winning quarterback, Hall of Famer. He's also outspoken about his faith. But what a lot of people don't know or have forgotten is that, you know, he wasn't always in the spotlight. He played college football at Northern Iowa or something, a little D1 school, but he wasn't drafted in the NFL. He was invited to try out with Green Bay, and then the Packers cut him. And he ended up bagging groceries in a supermarket for $5.50 an hour. And I imagine in that moment, it felt like he felt like a failure. It was the end of a dream. And it looked like God had just shelved him. But God wasn't finished with him through, if you're familiar with even part of this story, through an unlikely set of circumstances, he got another shot. and the rest is history. He's not famous today because he never failed, but because God met him in the disappointment and he used him. And I, you know, I'm drawing a, you know, a parallel between his, it's kind of like his vocational life to our spiritual life, right? Maybe you hear that and you think, that's great for Peter, that's great for Super Bowl champs like Kurt Warner, but what about me? Well, I just want to ask you, like, well, what about the dad in our church who messed up his marriage and he humbled himself, he owned his mistakes, and he's allowed Jesus to restore him? Or what about the mom who walked away from her faith for a season, and when she came back, she discovered that Jesus had never given up on her? Or what about that person who's made a lot of destructive choices throughout their life, but finds themselves here today, sitting in church or watching online, taking a step toward God? Or what about you? Maybe you've had your failure moment. Maybe that's plural for you. And maybe everyone knows about it. Or maybe nobody knows about it. But you wonder if God has just moved on from you to find more faithful people that he can rely on. John 21 is proof that he hasn't. The God that met Peter in his failure, that met Kurt Warner in a grocery store, has met countless others in their quiet brokenness. He will meet you in your failure. And he's going to keep showing up in your life, whether you like it or not. And he's going to keep stepping right in the middle of your failure. He's going to invite himself in to the middle of it because he wants a meaningful relationship with you. Because he has a higher purpose for you. And he's inviting you to follow him. Even if you rescued a cat and ran it over. Will you pray with me? God, thank you that you never give up on us, that you meet us in our failure. And thank you for leaving us with this vivid picture, not just of your amazing life and ministry, but this little microcosm of a moment with someone that just was disappointed in themselves and walked away from you, and yet you never gave up on them. For anyone who feels that that's happening to them right now, I pray that they would embrace this story as part of their next step towards you. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, guys. Let's stand and worship together.
Hey, everybody, it's Britt again. Thanks for listening. If you need something, if you have a question, or you'd just like us to pray for you, you can reach us through email, info@sunridgechurch.org. We hope you'll listen in again next week, but in the meantime, keep helping people find and follow Jesus.